is Jason Babak, DC Comics artist on Justice League and Batman, and you're listening to the Cave of Solitude.
Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, your comic book and pop culture podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and we're so happy you chose to download this episode as you are in for a real treat of a conversation. Once again, myself and partner in crime, Martin Slam Duncan of the Fastball Special Podcast, had the privilege of talking with one of today's top comic book artists and professionals, and easily one of the nicest guys you will ever have the pleasure of meeting at a Comic-Con. If you're ever at one and this guy is on the bill, make sure you go up to his table. We're talking none other than the super talented Jason Fabok. Now, in the past few years, Jason has been on a tear drawing his life away for DC Comics on books such as Detective Comics, the weekly series Batman Eternal. He didn't draw all 52 issues, but the issues that he did have a part in drawing were phenomenal, as well as the epic bookend to the New 52 era of DC Comics. We're talking about the Justice League Darkseid War, which he worked on with Geoff Johns, who's, I mean, if you follow comic books, Geoff Johns is basically the writer for DC Comics. He's worked on just about every character you can think of, and in my opinion, one of the best writers that DC Comics has ever had. So to see him and Jason work on that book was a dream come true, because it was absolutely beautiful. If you haven't read it, definitely go pick up the trades for it. If you remember, we had Jason recently on the show as a guest when we did some coverage of Free Comic Book Day on location at Gotham Central, and we got to talk about another miniseries he worked on, the Batman and Flash crossover entitled The Button. And in that book, Jason drew some of my favorite moments that I've ever read in a Batman book. Honestly, that isn't hyperbole in any way whatsoever. It was an amazing book. Definitely go and check that one out as well if you're a Batman or a Flash fan. Just an editor's note before we continue with the episode. I love these Skype interviews that we're able to have with these creators. But every now and then, the technology likes to get in the way. So you'll notice at the beginning, there's a little bit of tech problems that we're trying to sort out. And I gotta send a special shout out to Martin Slam Duncan for holding down the fort and keeping the interview going as I had to go off and fight Skype for a little bit. It's just one of those headaches that sometimes you have trying to do this. So apologies for that. But all in all, the conversation was great. I got back into it. I was so happy to be able to share in the conversation with those guys. And I want to sincerely thank Jason for being so generous, as always, with his time. So without further ado, we hope you really enjoy this conversation with the one and only Jason Fabok.
Hey, folks, it's Martin Slam Duncan, and I am joined with co-host Eric the Vigilanthony. And we have an awesome show today. Our guest's work can be found in such titles as Detective Comics, Batman Eternal, Justice League, The Darkseid War, and one of the hottest recent storylines in Batman, The Button. Mr. Jason Fabok, welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Awesome.
We are
awesome.
So excited to have you here with us. It's awesome.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm honored.
That's awesome.
Now, I have to ask straight off the bat.
No there. Pun intended. Ooh, very nice.
That was terrible. when will those Gotham Knights and Metropolis Mammoths hockey jerseys be available to buy? Because those are awesome.
Yeah, those are.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. Those were just one-offs. Just for me, it's kind of an interesting story behind all that. If you want me to kind of go into that.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what had happened was this was before Batman issue 21. I was, I'm a big hockey fan. I'm a big fan of kind of the art of hockey, the uniform designs and all that kind of stuff. And so I thought it would kind of neat to mess around with some different hockey jerseys designs. And I had done some redesigns on my local OHL hockey team, the Windsor Spitfires, just for fun. I kind of come up with a different look for them and whatnot. And then I thought it'd be kind of neat to look and see if there's any official DC Comics hockey teams. And I found that there's been a couple throughout history, but their history is very loose in the sense that like there was like two or three Gotham teams and there's a couple Metropolis teams and
yeah. Oh, did we lose them?
Sorry about that.
No problem.
No, it's okay. We lost you, Jason. You were talking about the jerseys. Go for it.
Yeah, so did it cut out again?
Oh, no, I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Hello? There we are. Okay, I got lost for a second. I'm back.
All right, so let me, I'll just start over.
Okay, no problem.
No problem.
All right, so the story behind all those hockey jerseys is that, I was doing these different designs just for fun, some different hockey jerseys, and I'm a big fan of jersey designs and whatnot. And so what had happened was I looked up the in the DC canon kind of who the hockey teams were, and found out that there was one called the Gotham Blades, and the other one is called the Metropolis Mammoths.
Right.
And so I kind of came up with these jersey designs and kind of did a logo and whatnot. And I kind of slapped those up on the internet. And then when I got the script for Batman 21, Tom King had written that hockey scene into the comic.
Right.
And, which was a cool little surprise that he kind of put that in there so that I could showcase kind of my designs.
Did he know? Did he know you're such a big hockey fan?
Yeah, I'm sure he did, because I'm sure he saw the actual like my designs, and then he wrote that into the book. But then the cool thing is that I ended up getting a message from a fellow up in Toronto. His name is Jeff Tasca.
Okay,
and he works for a hockey jersey design, sporting uniform design place up in Toronto, and said, "Hey, I want to make these jerseys." And so we came to an agreement, and I'm doing an art piece for him, kind of like as a trade. And so,
cool.
We did the gray one first, and it looked awesome. And he said, why don't we try and do the white one? And then I had three designs. I had a yellow one as well. And so we did all three of those. And I mean, he was showing me all the kind of really cool pictures behind the scenes of how the logo was made and the numbers and kind of the design process. And when I finally got them at my house here, like they look like real pro hockey jerseys.
Oh man, I saw the pictures. They look great.
Yeah. Like the crest is like a real crest. It's not just like an iron on thing. It's like real stitching, and it's got different texture to it, and they're awesome jerseys. I'm going to wear, I might bring one with me to Fan Expo this year.
Oh, please. You got to.
If I'm at one of the panels or something like that, I might bring it and show it off there. But yeah, it's beautiful work. He did such a good job. It would be cool if DC would make even a limited run of them or something.
I
don't know if they would. Maybe if once I show some of the guys at the con like how they look, maybe they would think about something like that. But
maybe even for like a charity or something, get like 100 made or something. But it would be awesome.
And yeah, for sure.
Sign me up. Yeah, they're really cool. I think Anthony's having a bit of issues with the Skype, but we'll continue on. So when last time we talked a little bit about the button just came out at that point. And one of the comments that you said was that probably some of your best work, in your opinion, was what you've done on the JL run, right? So I ran out and I had to read this, and it was pretty phenomenal. I have to say, one of the things that struck me was in another conversation we had, you said that one of the key things about getting a job in the comic books is not only the talent, but also getting things done on time. right? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these pages with 10 to 15 characters on them, and I don't know how you're able to juggle those timelines. Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, that was a really, that was a hard book. That was a really hard book. It was a lot of fun to draw that book, but it was also, that was my life. Like, when you read that book, that was my life for a year, was just that book. I didn't go out too often. I was working on holidays. Drawing a team book opposed to a single character book is two totally different things. And it's funny, like, I look back on that and I wonder how I did it too. You have to get in a groove and you have to build up momentum and you can't stop. And that's how that was. It was once we ramped up and we were going on that book, I was drawing every day and the momentum had to keep going, because as soon as I ended that book, it was just exhaustion. I was done. And, I think that's part of it. You have to be psyched up. You have to be in the zone. And working with Jeff Johns was really great as well, because he was a very good encouragement. He would call me in the mornings. You know, most days he would give me a call, or every other day, and we would discuss things. And he would tell me how he liked the work, and that gave me a boost of confidence, and that helped me to push forward and to keep working and to keep doing my best. And so having that partnership there and him kind of cheerleading was great. And also the editors at DC, I worked with two editors on that book, Brian Cunningham. He's the head editor of all the Justice League stuff. And he was a great support as well. And you know, sometimes the editors, like, their job is to keep you from burning out.
I could see that though.
It's like they're also in your corner trying to cheer you on, trying to get you to keep going. Cause there was many times during that series that I just wanted to give up. Like, it was just too much, especially the last issue 50. There was such a tight time crunch on that thing because of the fact that they were doing the DC Rebirth relaunch, and that book was kind of the lead into the Rebirth thing, because the way that it ends is kind of leads into DC Rebirth, and that book had to be out like the week before the DC Universe Rebirth number one that Jeff had done, the 80 page giant or whatever, came out the week after. And I had to draw 44 pages, but only had like 30 something days to do it. It was like this book, like most of the time, those pages would take me a day to a day and a half to draw. And all of a sudden I had to figure out how I was going to draw 40 pages in 30 days. I had to somehow come up with 10 pages. I'd have to do, like, it was just incredible. And I didn't think I could do it.
And they're so dense. Like, there's so much going on in those pages. It was unbelievable. Holy cow. Well, that's... It is a good thing. I mean, it just, like as you said, it's easily to burn out on something like that dense and that timeline. One of the other things that really struck me in that book was the creation of those uniforms. So a lot of them, particularly around the God form uniforms, right? So did you actually have a lot of direction on those, or is that all you? Is that all your sort of vision on the God form? So you had like the Superman, the Dark Flash, Metron Chair, Batman, Apocalypse, Luthor, all new costumes.
yeah. I got to design all those, and Jeff was very open to me doing whatever I really wanted to do artistically. He knew that I liked to design and do that kind of stuff, and so he put a lot of that in the book so that I could, you know, play around with it. And some of those, like the Apocalypse Luthor design, they're still currently using that in Action Comics or whatever, when he puts on his suit, he has like the weird, the Superman blue suit now, the armored suit. So,
right.
You know, so some of that stuff stayed, and there were some designs that didn't make it into that. Like I had designed a different version for Jessica Cruz, the new female Green Lantern.
I had
done my own take on that character, and then it didn't work out. They ended up going with a different design because they had decided that they were, with Rebirth coming up, they were going to do give her her own book and stuff like that. So my design, I had to change my design at the last minute to what they had come up with. But you know, it was a lot of fun. That's one thing I really loved doing, is I really love to create different looks and different characters and costumes. And so, you know, whenever I work on any book, I'm always asking if I can do that. And sometimes they let you, sometimes they don't. But it all worked out this time.
Yeah, you knocked it out of the park. I mean, I'm a New Gods fan, and I got to tell you, and I didn't even know Mr. Miracle was in this book. And then I turned the page, and he's got this absolutely phenomenal, I mean, it's very reminiscent of his older outfit, but it was also very new and fresh. Like, were you a fan of this character before going in, and did you have ideas of how you wanted to design that character for that run?
Yeah, the only exposure I had really ever had to Mr. Miracle was from the old Justice League Unlimited cartoon. There was one episode in there where him and Big Barda had to go to Apocalypse and they had to fight Kalibak or something like that. And that's pretty much the only thing I knew about Mr. Miracle. But I always really liked that episode, and I really liked the character. I always thought he was a really cool character. Yeah. And so when Jeff had said, like, hey, we're going to have this whole New Gods thing with Darkseid, and we're going to have, you know, Apocalypse and all this stuff. And he said, is there any characters you really want to draw? And I said, yeah, I really want to draw Mr. Miracle. Like, that, he's one of my favorite characters. And and Jeff was on the same page. He's like, yeah. He's like, I've been reading all of the old Mr. Miracle issues to get myself prepared so I could write him. And so, you know, we brought him back, and we had discussed different costume designs and stuff. And they had a current costume design I wasn't too hot on. I just asked, hey, can I do kind of my own thing? And so I created something that was a little different. I had a blast. He was one of my favorite characters to draw in that series. And Big Barda as well. She was great. And there was a whole bunch of other New Gods characters I've never, like Kanto. I remember he's like, it's like, I never even heard of this character, you know, but Jeff, the way Jeff pitched him to me and the way we put him into the story, you know, it made it exciting and really special, you know, to draw some of those characters. And I fell in love with them. I'm happy I got to draw them.
Oh yeah, for example, Metron. I'm reading it again, and I'm looking at Metron's outfit, and you know, I'm seeing the white lines, and you know, it was very striking. But there is something that was very familiar about it, and I was thinking about it, and I said, it kind of reminds me of the old Tron movie. And then I get through the book, and then there's the notes, and literally, I think that you wrote a little note on it saying like Tron. So, so were you like a fan? Were you like a fan? And I was like, yes, I knew it. Were you a fan of the movie, or is it just sort of that sort of struck you as something similar to that design?
Yeah, I like the original Tron movie, but I never really watched that one when I was a kid. It was the newer one that came out recently, that Disney did with couple years back, and I really loved, like, I like that movie. I watch it every once in a while, and the one thing with all those character designs is I wanted to keep them very similar to the original Kirby designs, but just my thought was like, what if you saw them in a movie, how would they look, you know? And so, you know, they might kind of retain some of the same look that they have from the Jack Kirby look, but you know, a little bit you know, design their costumes with some more fancier parts and designs and whatnot. And so the Metron, I just went back, I looked at the original design, and then kind of came up with something that was you know, that mixed with some of the previous versions that have been out. Same with Mr. Miracle. His costume design is pretty much the same as it was. I just added some gray to it. And same with Big Barda. It's very similar to what it's always been. And Kanto and Calabac and everything like that. So it's fun. It's fun. And I always use a lot of different – I pull from a lot of different things when I'm designing characters. And what I do is I'll like my character design sketches at the end, they're very messy. They're just quick. It's like, cause I don't want to spend hours on something for them to tell me like, oh, I don't like that. So
but
I
you
just
can see it there. You can still see where where it came from.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, you get it out, you send it to them. If they like it, that's cool. And then you move on. Like and it's funny, like how many times it's actually like the first design you do, you just handed one and they're like, yeah, that looks good. so it's always fun. And I enjoy drawing characters and paying tribute to the original creators. So I didn't want to go too far off from what the original Jack Kirby designs were. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it was 2015. It's like, it needs to kind of become a little modern in some ways, but I don't want to lose kind of the magic that the original characters had, in their design.
Oh, for sure.
I'm back, guys. What did I miss? Did I miss all of the Justice League talk? Because I've been dying to talk about that book.
Yeah, I covered all of it. Sorry, man.
Oh, man, this stupid internet. I heard you guys talking about Mr. Miracle, actually. And Jason, I don't know if you heard Tom King recently on another podcast. He said that your design of Mr. Miracle is one of the most beautiful things he ever saw, and that it was kind of an inspiration in their choosing to do a Mr. Miracle book. Like it kind of put him on board even more. So it goes to your design really had an impact on people. So kudos to you.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I'm excited to read that book.
Oh, so am I.
You know, that's one of those, like there's a lot of different comic projects where sometimes you see it, you hear about it coming out and you think, oh man, I would have liked to have worked on that, you know? And, that was one of them. That would have been one of the books where if they probably would have asked me if I wanted to do a couple issues, I probably would have said yes. Because I fell in love with that character. I love that character. And, I'm really excited to read his take on it. It's going to I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah. I think he tweeted out the other day, something along the lines is the new Mr. Miracle is going to be one of the most violent DC comics ever. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's going to be a very different take on that.
Yeah. Sounds cool. Sounds cool.
Were you, Jason, were you always a Kirby fan, or had you been a Kirby fan before you worked on some of these characters like the New Gods? Did you draw a lot from that when you were designing the book?
As far as a Kirby fan, I really haven't been. I mean, I think all comic artists in some way are Jack Kirby fans in the sense that, you know, he's like the godfather of all
right.
of modern comic yep. art, right? I mean,
right.
I respect him and I love the designs and stuff like that. But I never, like when I was, you know, growing up and whatnot, I probably wouldn't have looked at a Jack Kirby comic and thought it was something great. And I don't say that to mean disrespect, but when you're like a teenager, I'm looking at like Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri right. and David right. Finch.
Exactly.
It's like, I want to draw like that. But as I've gotten older and I've studied his work and looked at his work, I can see that he's the one who came up with pretty much how to tell a comic book story, you know, how to tell a modern comic book story. It all stems from Jack Kirby. And I've always been a big fan of his designs. And I love, you know, sometimes, you know, go on the internet and type in Google, like, you know, New Gods designs. And there's all kinds of stuff that he had designed for those characters, different versions of them. And each one of them was, you know, he had really interesting, and he knew how to design characters and make them stand out. And, you know, and so it's when I'm designing, I'm looking for some of those things to help, you know, bring characters out and make them look unique and fascinating. And so, I always kind of knew about the New Gods characters, like I was saying before, but I never read their comics or anything like that. But I've seen the characters in cartoons and some other, you know, material here and there. But, after finishing this Dark Side War series, I really became that much more of a fan of those characters. And, I'm hoping that DC will do, I'm hoping that they'll bring back some of those characters. They're starting with Mr. Miracle, and I hope that book does well, and that will be a launching pad for maybe an Orion book.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I guess talking about creating characters, one of the characters you co-created was Grail, and I guess it kind of struck me when you see Grail early, basically you see Grail as a child. You probably could have gone either way. You could have made the Grail character be more of the Amazon or more of the Darkseid kind of look. What made you sort of lean a little bit towards the Amazon type look?
Yeah, that was actually Jeff's call. Jeff had kind of hinted at that character in some of the other comics that they were doing during his Justice League run. He kind of hinted that there was a daughter of Darkseid, and then when we came to actually drawing that book, he told me, like, all right, we need a design for this character. His description was pretty much it would be a cross between Wonder Woman and Darkseid. She should be taller than Wonder Woman and taller than all the other Justice League characters.
Right.
But I don't want her like buff. I don't want her to look like a monster. She should be beautiful and, you know, like the perfect kind of physique. But a mix of the Amazon with Darkseid and the Apocalypse kind of thing. And so I approached the character that way when I was designing her. If you notice her costume, the way she looks is very like a mix between a Wonder Woman with Darkseid kind of colors. And then even in the book, like if you notice, like her mother, Marina Black, her armor and the armor inside of her armory is essentially Grail's armor. So I tried to tell a story like as if, you know, she had given, like her mother had given her the armor, and then she kind of turned her armor into her own looking thing. And that's kind of how it all kind of evolved. So I tried to put little hints like as if her look is actually an Amazon armor look that her mother once wore kind of thing. And, you know, so I had a lot of fun. I love that character. I saw that they're bringing Grail back for a Wonder Woman, for the new Wonder Woman, like issues or something like that. And, I'm hoping one day maybe we'll use her for a movie or something, into one of the movies. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be awesome.
It could fit the way they're, they're bringing Darkseid. So, Wonder Woman did great. So that would make a great movie.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. Sure. When you were coming up with the whole Darkseid War plot and you were speaking with Jeff, did you have an idea that there'd be some sort of a movie tie-in at the time as you're preparing for this thing?
Personally, I kind of did, only because I knew that Jeff was spearheading all the DC stuff. And I wondered if some of this stuff was, in some ways he's writing it in the continuity of the comics, so that when the movies come out, it's like, it's been part of the continuity of the comics and it's going to evolve in the movie. It's been known now that Steppenwolf is going to be the bad guy in the Justice League movie. Well, it just so happens that we put Steppenwolf in the issue just for a couple pages there, but he's in one of those issues. And I wondered at the time, I kind of wondered, well, why are you introducing this character? But he already probably knew that, well, Steppenwolf's going to be the bad guy. And so I'm going to put him in the comic because I want to introduce people to that character in some way or, you know, my thinking is that I'm kind of thinking in the back of my mind, like I wonder if he created Grail as a female, a new female villain that could help mix from the Wonder Woman universe into the Darkseid universe, you know, like, and maybe they'll use that character. I don't know. I don't really know. That's gotta be exciting though.
Oh, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
I don't know any of the insider stuff, but as thinking, it would make sense. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that they're doing right now is intended to be used in the movies in some way. I'm sure when the Justice, or not the Justice League, the Green Lantern Corps movie comes out, I'm sure that they're going to have Jessica Cruz in there because it adds a female Green Lantern and I'm sure that's why she's been introduced into the comics now as a new Green Lantern. You know, they have, because the Warner Brothers, the movie stuff and the comics is all kind of tied together in some ways. I think they're trying to use a lot of the influence from the comics, test out the characters in the comics, see if people like them, and then maybe put those into the movies. It'll be exciting to see. I hope that some of these characters will show up. Like, I hope that some of the stuff we've done in Darkseid War will show up in a movie. I don't know.
I'd love a Darkseid War movie. That would be fantastic if that's the movie that they were doing. Like, I'd go crazy. When you were working on that book again, going back to it, the scope of having the Anti-Monitor in a story, whenever that's included in the DC lore, it's going always back to, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths. What kind of a thrill was that for you? Were you a DC fanboy growing up to now be drawing this book with Jeff Johns, who's like the curator of everything DC, and be like, oh my goodness, the Anti-Monitor is in this. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a big DC Comics fan. I was actually more of a Marvel fan growing up. I knew Batman. I knew Superman. That was pretty much it. I followed a lot of Batman, and I knew some of the characters from the old Superman cartoon growing up, and Batman the Animated Series. But I didn't know all the ins and outs of the DC universe. I was more of a Marvel fanboy. I knew all the Marvel characters. I knew all the bad guys and the villains and the storylines and stuff like that. I fell in love with DC stuff more into my late teens and into my 20s when I started to read books like Kingdom Come and Blackest Night and all these kinds of things, and that kind of started to introduce me to the pantheon of DC characters. But Anti-Monitor, to me, I always really dug that character. I found him very strange and unique, and when Jeff said, yeah, we're going to have the Anti-Monitor in there, it was cool. And I got to kind of do a take on him where Jeff wanted to bring the design kind of back to the original design. That's kind of what we tried to do is do a modern but original take on the original design, I guess. And so, it was a lot of fun, and I loved that character. And, it's funny, like when you draw comics, sometimes you're asked to draw characters that you don't really care too much about. But by the time you've actually finished drawing those characters, you love those characters because you've gotten into their heads and you've kind of tried to figure out who they are and how would I tell the story from this character's perspective. And then when you finish drawing the book, you feel like you have a connection with that character. Wonder Woman would be a great example of that. Like I always thought Wonder Woman was kind of cool, but I never really followed the character, and I never ever thought I would really get a kick out of drawing the character. And then I got to draw the character, and then it was like, man, I love this character. I would love to draw a Wonder Woman book, like that kind of a thing. And so, Lex Luthor, that was another character. I've always thought Lex Luthor was kind of a lame character. I don't know. But then I drew him in Justice League, and I loved him. He was one of my favorite characters to draw. I had the most fun when I was drawing Lex Luthor. So,
And you actually drew both versions of the Monitor, because you did a splash page right with a sort of a Crisis homage, and then you did the new version. That was really cool. So it's almost as if the character, I guess, evolved into that new form or a new costume.
Yeah, yeah, And yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed drawing that character, and it'll be interesting when they to see if they'll bring him back the future.
So speaking, I have to ask, when we spoke last time, I think you mentioned that the character in DC you really wanted to draw was Batman, so that worked out, and the villain was Joker. So I got to ask, if you were put on a Marvel book, what hero and villain would you like to draw the most?
Well, if I was going to draw any Marvel book, I would probably do X-Men. I would only do X-Men if it was a storyline and like if it was taken back to the way it was done in the early 90s with like the old X-Men animated series. That to me the X-Men animated series that was my introduction to X-Men, and I love that show. I would love to draw, you know, Cyclops and Wolverine and all those characters. My favorite Marvel villain is probably Apocalypse.
Nice.
I've always found him creepy and I just always loved that character, and the Four Horsemen. And, I think that would be the book. I mean, there's lots of characters at Marvel that would be a lot of fun to draw. Captain America Daredevil would be great to draw. Yeah. Even Spider-Man, I don't think my art necessarily would fit a Spider-Man book, but it would be fun to draw him here and there, because he was one of my favorites growing up as well.
I want to read that Daredevil book.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great fit for you.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. All those things you mentioned, Captain America 2 or like an Avengers book, because from the sounds and looks of it, you're really good with these team books, these ensemble stories. Is it something that you enjoy putting a bunch of characters on the page together, or do you prefer a solo character? I know the team books are harder, but some guys love drawing as many characters as they can.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll do more team books in the future. It's a totally different beast. If I was, to be honest, like if they gave me more time per issue, team books would be a blast. But a lot of the times it's so tight and you feel like you have to cut corners and you feel like you have to really rush everything. And so that makes it tough. But, I do enjoy the team books. I hope in the future I can do some more, we'll have to see what the future has in store. It just all depends on the storyline and who the writer is and what the book is. That's important.
So I guess along those lines too, I was going to ask you, do you prefer doing covers or do you prefer doing the sequentials? And let's assume that time is not as much an issue.
Yeah, I think I like doing the sequentials. I like telling a story. In fact, I find the hardest thing is when I'm doing covers. I find the hardest thing is that there's usually very little direction. It's kind of like, well, we just need a really cool image of this, and this is kind of what happens in the story. But just kind of do something and. I struggle with those. I struggle with those kinds of pages and those covers. I like knowing the story, and I like to tell a story through the cover in some way. And I would say, when I'm on a sequential book and I'm deep into the storyline, like I love it. I love telling a story through the visuals of the art every once in a while you find a cover that you really enjoy and you're really having fun on it and everything just comes together. But I find a lot of times the covers is something I have to really fight my way through, especially when I'm not working on the book too. Like if I'm working on a series,
you know, like, right. let's take the button, for example. Like, I did two of the four issues, but I did all the covers, but I kind of knew what was going on, and I was invested because I was working on the books at the time, and I was really excited about them. So I just felt like those covers just came naturally, and I just drew them. Like, they just kind of happened. Whereas, you know, if I'm doing covers for somebody else's book and I'm just doing the covers for it, I find that because I don't really know what's going on in the book and I'm not invested into that, I find it harder to kind of come up with an idea and actually, you know, invest myself in the artwork. I definitely say sequentials over just cover images.
Do you find too that with the speaking on covers, that the art of making covers is a little different now in respects to the fact that there's so many people sometimes making variant covers, whereas back in the day when we would go to the newsstand, you would see the cover, and like you said, it told a story that was found within the book. Like, sometimes you'd even have the speech bubbles on there, which I don't necessarily care for, but now a lot of these covers are more posters or just big advertisements. Does that affect also the process of how you come up with these covers, that you're kind of competing for who's got the hottest cover as opposed to the story?
Yeah, that sometimes comes into play. I find actually the hardest thing about cover is just the fact that everything's been done. You know, like sometimes I hand in a layout and I'm like, haven't I already drawn something like that before? like, you know, there's only so many things you can really do with a comic book cover and the image that you're trying to do. And it's just kind of switching up characters or, you know, like a lot of times you look at old covers and you say, oh, I like that composition, I might use something like that. But, I find it tough a lot of the times. And a lot of the times it's like my biggest pet peeve about comic covers is when they say, hey, do you want to do this cover? I say, okay, well, what do you want me to draw? And then they say, you know, such and such character fighting such and such. It's like, well, I don't know, like fighting covers, like they're boring to draw. It's just, I like more like the movie posters kind of design where you can have floating heads and stuff like that. And, one of my favorite cover artists is Mike Mignola.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy, like, if you look at his work, he literally draws the same cover every single book. Like, he has the same layout, but it works every single time. It works, it works, it works. And so, you know, I love his covers and I love his layouts. And, a lot of the times I try to riff off of that. But again, like, you can only do so much. And, it's tough. It's tough to come up with covers. And, there's some guys who are really, really good at it. I don't know if I'm necessarily the best at covers. I think I'm a better storyteller.
The lenticular ones though, cause they kind of tell a story in a way. It was your approach to those lenticular covers a lot different than, say, a different type of color? Like, what is that process? Because there were a couple that really told a story, I think, particularly in the second Batman button one. I think it was great. And actually the Flash one as well. Both really great covers.
Yeah, those covers, the layouts actually were given to me by Jim Lee for those ones. DC had kind of talked in their whiteboard room or whatever, and they kind of had come up with some different layouts, and then they would send those layouts to me and say, hey, what do you think about this? And then I would then bring back a different, like something that was similar, or say, well, this, I think we need to change this and blah, 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 blah. And so, it was kind of neat because a lot of the thinking behind it was already kind of, they kind of knew what they wanted because they were planning the story.
Right.
And so then I got the, they kind of gave me the layout. So it was like a good jumping off point, but a lot of the layouts that they gave me, the art actually changed quite a bit. You know, the process of that is, you know, you start off the same, but you know that you're going to have to draw two different images to essentially make one.
Right.
one cover, but you draw the image and then you have to separate out the different parts. So if you want something in the foreground, you cut it out. Like for example, Batman 21 with Batman and Flash holding the Watchmen button, you know, like the hand and the button is a layer. And then the character's head is a layer. And then the background is a layer. And even the bats were on a different layer. And then I kind of put it all together in the computer and then sent it off, kind of thing. And so it's
almost like animation in a way.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah, yeah. Very much. Yeah, very awesome.
So you said before you think you're a better storyteller than a cover guy. And I think your storytelling is phenomenal, but there's pictures of people on Facebook and Instagram who are tattooing your Batman the Button cover. So, you know, your covers are having an impact on people if they're willing to tattoo it on them. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's really cool to see. And, you know, it's always neat when somebody sends something like that in and you just, I look at it and I think, wow, like I can't believe that somebody would want some image that I drew up, you know, in my basement, you know, in my basement office. I'm working in there and I whipped that thing out. I drew those images as fast as humanly possible to make deadline. And then somebody wants to tattoo that on their body. It's really cool. I have to say, I really enjoy seeing that. And my family gets a kick out of that too. Like my mom sees stuff like that. She thinks it's a riot, you know, that somebody would do that. But,
you know, you've made it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, marked forever.
Pretty cool.
You reading anything right now? Or are you too busy to read comics?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What am I reading right now? I've been reading the Dark Knight 3 series. Yeah. Okay. I just got the final issue, but I haven't actually sat down to read it yet. I've been actually at night, I've been rereading some of the original Ninja Turtles comics. My 2-year-old son, he's starting to get to that age where he wants to kind of play with action figures.
Awesome.
So I went out and I got some used original like vintage Ninja Turtle figures that one, you know, the ones that, you know, I had when I was a kid, and we've been playing with those at night. And I'm on this big Ninja Turtle thing right now. I just been like, he's into it, and we've been watching some of the old cartoon episodes. Oh, awesome. And it's something that we kind of just been doing together. So I always really liked the original Ninja Turtle comics. And so I've been kind of just reading those. I've been reading Seven to Eternity.
Oh, that's a beautiful book. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, and I'm reading it more or less for the art, because I love
some nice art in that book. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Jerome Pena. He's one of my favorite comic artists. He's very underrated. I think he's one of the best in the industry. And you know, I'm enjoying the story, but I normally look at a lot of comics for the art. I look at the artists and I try to get inspiration from them. That's just kind of how I read comics.
The Jerome Pena in that book is phenomenal. And I mean, as an artist, naturally, I hear a lot of artists say the same thing, that they look at the art to be inspired by it and stuff. And Remender is no slouch on the pen either. Have you been, speaking of Ninja Turtles, it's interesting you brought it up. Have you been reading any of the newer stuff that they're coming out with from IDW? I was collecting those for a little bit. Those are really good too. If you're a Ninja Turtle fan, I highly recommend them. Have you checked them out?
No, I haven't checked them out, but you know, maybe I will. Maybe next time I'm at a convention or something, I'll see if I can pick up a collected edition or something like that. But it's like Ninja Turtles for me, if that would be another one of those dream books. Like there's a couple of dream books I have that if money wasn't an object and I could essentially just do whatever and not have to really worry about getting a paycheck or or worry about, you know, that I'm signed to an exclusive with such and such company or whatever, there would be pretty much Ninja Turtles would be one. I would love to draw like a mini series or something, classic, take it back to its roots, Ninja Turtles. And the other one would be Hellboy.
Cool.
If I could draw a Hellboy mini series with Mike Mignola, I would, like, that would be one of those dream projects as well.
Have you tried drawing that character? Because I know a lot of artists have a hard time trying to draw that character not being like Mignola.
Yeah, I actually haven't. I should sit down and try and doodle Hellboy one day, but it's just that I've been thinking like, well, maybe I'll do some Ninja Turtle art for my son, but I haven't even had much time to do that either. I'm attracted to, I've always loved Mike Mignola's his storytelling, and I think Hellboy as a whole, like, Hellboy's probably like the only comic book series I've read where I've read every issue. Like, I don't really read too many comic book books, but Hellboy is something I went back and I collected all the issues and I read them, and I really loved the story, and I love the character, and I'm excited to hear that they're going to be kind of rebooting the movie franchise.
Hoping
they kind of go back more. I hope they stick more to the comic book version. Right. I didn't really like the previous Hellboy movies. Everybody wanted a Hellboy 3. I'm like, nah, like, reboot that thing and take it back to the way it was in the comics.
I like the actor they picked for that. He was in the TV show Stranger Things, the sheriff. Yeah. I can't recall his name, but I thought he did a great job. So it gives me hope.
Yeah.
He looks like he'd be right for the part too. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I think they did a good job casting that.
So Jason, can I ask you a question in regards to working for DC? Cause I'm a big DC guy and you were quite busy during the New 52 era, but how do you compare, the New 52 era of DC with now what they're doing in Rebirth as far as a creator yourself? What was it like then? And what's it like now? What's the difference?
I don't really know if there's too much of a difference. I think that, the biggest difference of the two eras is that now they're doing their comics bi-weekly, and that's affected a lot of the decisions that I'm making. You know, you'll notice that I haven't been on any monthly books.
Right,
and, it's because I don't want to work at that kind of pace. It's, you're working your tail off, you know, for 4 months, and then your books come out in about, you know, twice a month. So if you do 4 issues in 4 months and they come out in 2 months, and then you disappear for a little while, and then somebody else comes in and he has to do the next story arc. So you can't do long story arcs on books anymore. And, I think it's working. The sales are good right now, but I think that was the reason why Jeff and I left Justice League, because we finished Justice League and they were going to change it to a bi-weekly schedule. And I said, I don't think I want to do that. I'd rather do like a mini series or something like that. And
right. Yeah.
So we both kind of decided, all right, well, let's leave. And, you know, and then Jeff got into his movie stuff now. I've done a couple little things. I mean, that's not 100% the reason why I haven't been on any monthlies. I also, after Justice League, I was so burnt out, and we, at that time, my son was only maybe, I think he was maybe a year old. And, I just decided that I wanted to just spend more time with family. I've been working right. my tail off for the last 6 years. And, you know, I never took breaks. I wasn't taking weekends off, like, and it just wears on you. And so the last year I've taken it really slow. I've been doing a lot of side projects that eventually they'll be revealed, superhero related, but they're not comic book projects, but they were fun kind of things to do on this, that, you know, it was just a change of pace. And, I'm sure, like we had kind of talked about before the interview, I can't tell you what I'm working on now.
We're dying to know.
Will it be a mini series of some kind, like back in the comics?
It will be something very significant, and okay. It'll be something that the way it's looking and shaping up right now, it'll be something where I can take some time and draw at a much slower pace. And so I'm hoping by doing that, I'll be able to maybe do the best work of my career. I'm just hoping to, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for now. And, it's from a career perspective, like one thing I'm really trying to do now is I don't just want to do books just for the sake of doing a book. I don't just want to jump on an issue of whatever and just do it for the sake of that. I want to choose projects from here on out that are going to be, they're going to build a legacy or that are going to have some sort of significance historically within the comic books. And that's something that I'm doing, and it's a kind of a risk reward because I won't be on the shelves in the sense of books for a little while I'm working on this thing. But then when this comic comes out, I'm thinking that I just have the feeling it's going to be one of the biggest comic books of 2018. So it's kind of like you're kind of, it's a risk reward thing, but that's kind of how I wanted to do it from here on out. I want to choose wisely with the projects I choose. And also I want to do things where it's going to work out with my family as well, that I can have a life that I can see that I can be there for my kid. Like I want to, the way I was working before, you know, I wouldn't be able to coach hockey or baseball with my son. Like there's no way those are things I really want to do. And there's no way I could have done that at the pace I was going before. So sometimes you have to make little sacrifices, but I think in the end, everything will work out for the better.
Yeah, it sounds like the wise choice.
You definitely got to consider work and life balance. So have you ever considered doing a creator-owned project? Like, do you have a story and a character potentially that you've always kind of wanted to do?
Yes, that is one of my goals for my career. I have been working on something for, it's been years actually. I've been kind of slowly coming up with a story and a backstory and all this kind of stuff. And, it's something that, I do want to tackle at some point. It just has to all kind of come together at the right time. Cause with a creator owned book, it's another major risk. You're stepping away from DC Comics. I'd have to step away from DC Comics. You have to put an investment in your book. You know, you don't just go to Image and say, "Hey, I want to do a book." Like you have to put down a certain amount of money in order for marketing and to pay for different things that go into making the book. And then you have to make sure that that book can sell a certain amount of copies, so then you can make your money back and make a living off of it. And so there's a lot of things like that kind of come into play. And it just has to, everything would have to line up at the right time. And I do think I will take that risk eventually, maybe sometime in the next couple of years. I don't know, but I feel I want to do it once I feel 100% confident with my idea. And so that's something I'm still trying to develop, and that's something I'm still trying to figure out. I have some things down, but there's other things I'm still not 100% sure of. And the way I think I would approach it is that I would just say, I just want to do four issues. Again, you going back to Mike Mignola and Hellboy, you know, the first storyline is four issues.
Right.
And he probably just figured, I'm just going to do this story. And then once I'm done this, I'll probably go back to DC and work there again. You know, I'm sure he wasn't expecting Hellboy to become like a 25 year, you know, thing for him. He was just like, in fact, I talked to him once at a con and I asked him, I said, well, you know, what's some advice you could give if I ever wanted to branch out and do a creator-owned book? And he said, first thing he said was just do a story. Don't worry about about if the story is going to become a big hit or it's going to make lots of money or anything like that. He said, just do a story because that's something that you want to draw, that you want to tell and that you want to draw, and just have fun. And he said, if it becomes a success, hey, that's a great bonus. If not, you got to create something unique, right, and something that you can call your own. And, and so, you know, I think that's how I would do it. I would do a couple issues and leave the story kind of open in some way so that I could do further stories. Or if nobody buys the thing, I move on.
It's in the world. You put it out there in the world. Yeah. Any hints on that? What that might be? Is it a superhero story?
No, yeah. I actually would do something. I want to do a, if I ever did something, it would be more of a sci-fi.
Okay.
Sci-fi story. It would still be dark and gritty and grimy and all that kind of stuff. But, I think I would do something different from the superhero stuff. I love superhero comics. That's the kind of comics I love to read. But I think I would, if I was going to do a creator owned thing, I would want to tell maybe a different, you know, a different side. I've always really loved Star Wars and, Indiana Jones and all these kinds of other kinds of things. I like kind of the sci-fi fantasy stuff. So I think it would be kind of fun to explore some of that.
Would you want to write it yourself or would you want to collaborate with somebody?
I think I would try and write it by myself. The problem with collaborating is that you are giving up control of it. I think I would have to find a writer that was on the same page with me as, you know, the themes and the things that I would want to tell and that I would trust with, hey, here's my idea. But a lot of times I think, I don't really know, but I would think that a lot of times if you went up to a writer and said, hey, I have this idea, do you want to write it? They would probably want to do their idea.
Yeah.
Draw it instead of the
other. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see. That's something I'm thinking about, but it's probably not, it probably wouldn't happen for a few more years. So we'll see.
Awesome.
I have a few questions that came in from some of the listeners. I mentioned at some of our social media sites that we would be doing this interview, and quite a few questions came in. So I'm going to knock some of these off if that's okay.
Sure.
Brian Nadu, who is actually a really huge Batman fan, he asks, when starting in the biz, who were some of your inspirations when developing your style?
I think Jim Lee is probably the biggest inspiration. When I read Batman Hush, that was like one of those moments where I read that book and then I said, wow, like I was so blown away by the artwork in that book. And, I knew that once I read that, like, I kind of knew like, that's what I would love to be able to draw, like that style. And I really had to work at it to kind of figure out how to draw that kind of style of comic. But, Jim Lee would be one. David Finch, he was my mentor and I apprenticed with him for about 6 months. This was back before I even got my first job. And so he taught me a lot of his style and his technique. And that's why a lot of my earlier stuff looks very similar to his. The funny thing was I kind of worried about that. And I asked Dave, I said, well, you know, everybody's just going to think I'm just a David Finch ripoff. And he said, no, that's good. He says, that means you'll get a job. he's like, my art style sells books and they'll give you a job because of it. And he said, don't worry, you know, your art, your style will kind of evolve as you go through your career and it will change into its own thing. And he was right because since then, I pull a lot of different inspiration from guys like Gary Frank and Ivan Rice and, even other artists like Tim Sale and Mike Mignola. And, you know, you kind of pull from different inspirations and kind of put it all in the pot. But I do have Dave Finch always told me, it kind of sounds like, I don't know, it kind of sounds a little sleazy in some ways or like, I don't really know how to describe it, but he said, you know, if you want to make it in comics and you want to have a long lasting career,
he said, you can't be one of these guys who's so super original that it's just like nobody else kind of draws like that. Like, he said, you know, there's only so many of those guys, like Tim Sale, for example. He's got a very unique style, but like his style isn't the kind of style that sells tons of comic books. He had some great runs on Batman and stuff, and those are awesome books. But he's not the kind of artist that DC or Marvel would go to and say, "Hey, we want you to draw our mega event that's going on right now."
Right.
You know, Dave said, "Go to a Comic-Con, look who has the longest lines, and who people are the most nuts for, and who are the highest selling artists." And he said, you know, the highest selling artists continually every single year are guys like Jim Lee and Ivan Rice and David Finch, that kind of artwork. And, you know, guys like Todd McFarlane, the guy really hasn't drawn too much in the last 10, 15 years, but he's got massive lines at Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People love his style. And he had that very big, bold comic book style. And so Dave said, if you can emulate that in your art, you will never have a problem finding work. And he was right. I had to train myself to kind of draw the way I draw. I naturally would have probably went more of a cartoonier, stylized route, but I've really worked at the more of the big, bold, dark shadow, you know, kind of gritty comic book look like a Jim Lee or a David Finch. And the reason is because I want to work on the biggest books that DC has, and I want to work on the biggest books in the industry. And they only give those books to certain style of artists that they know is going to sell. It's just that's kind of how business works. Right. And so, something that I've done and I've profited from it. It was good advice. And, that's something I always tell, you know, young artists at Comic Cons. I always ask them, who are your favorite artists? And then, you know, I usually say, well, you know, make sure that, you know, if you're going to emulate artists, emulate guys who are very, very successful, because there's a reason why they're successful. It's because they sell a lot of books and they make a lot of money for the companies that they work for. And if you want to have a long lasting career, try to take a lot of your influence from those guys, and because that'll only help your career to expand and you'll never look for work, you know?
Right.
It's all worked out.
How did that, speaking of David Finch, how did that connection, where did it come from? How did you guys meet and were you able to apprentice for him?
Yeah. He lives about half an hour away from me. I live in Southern Ontario, in a small town near, along Lake Erie. And he lives in Windsor, which is a good 20, 25, 30 minute drive from me. I live out in the country. And so I knew that he was from the area. And when I was going to college, I went to St. Clair College in Windsor. And, he actually came in and talked to our class about his job. And that was the first time I kind of met him. Yeah. And then a friend of mine from college, he knew Dave. He was kind of getting some art lessons from him at the time. And I learned that Dave did occasionally take apprentices and kind of teach him how to draw. And then those guys would kind of help him do backgrounds and stuff for his comics. It's called a pencil assist. And so I sent my portfolio. I got Dave's email. I sent my portfolio to him. And I just wanted a couple tips, and he invited me over to his house, and we went over my portfolio, and he gave me a couple of little drawing things to do. And I went back home, and I then came back a couple of days later, showed him what I had. He was impressed and said, "All right, go home. And now I'm going to teach you how to draw this. I'm going to teach you how to draw that." And that turned into me going over to his house, you know, every other day or every 3 days or a couple times a week, for about 6 months. And he just kind of, we went through everything. He taught me how to draw heads and hands and feet and bodies and cars and buildings and sci-fi stuff. And
it's awesome.
I kind of kind of taught me all of his secrets and kind of how he gets through his work. And originally it was to be a pencil assist. It was to help him out drawing these comics. But at the time he was just doing covers, I think, for Marvel. And so, and then he made a move to DC and he wasn't doing a book there just yet. He was doing covers. And so, I had a portfolio ready and he said, let's send it in, see if you can get a job. And he sent it into DC and they gave me a job. So
that's amazing.
So it's
incredible.
That's how that all worked out.
Wow. Another listener, Nick Lukic, what he's asking is, when you're doing paneling and storytelling, what is your process in creating the flow of the story?
Well, a lot of that stuff comes from the script. I'll get a script from, my writer, and I'm kind of different in the way that I approach a comic book. I know a lot of guys, they'll sit there and they'll read the script and then they'll literally lay out the entire comic book. Hmm. Like they'll lay it out in rough and they'll go panel by panel and they'll lay out the entire book. I don't do that. If there's a couple scenes where it's like I really have to know where these characters are placed in and whatnot, I might do that. But a lot of the times I read the script a couple times. I kind of get the feel for how the book is, the story is flowing and whatnot. And then I literally lay out a page right before I'm going to draw it. So, okay, what's today's page? I look at it. I might look at the page before it. I might look at the couple pages after it just to kind of know where the story's going. But then I'll quickly lay out that page. And I literally takes me 30 seconds and I'll just go with my gut. I just go, okay, well, this is kind of how I think this way the page should look. And then I start drawing it. And then I'll draw it. Yeah. And then I finish it, and then I look the next day. It's like, okay, what's today's page? All right, I'll read it. I'll look at the next page and kind of see, oh, okay, well, I got to have these characters interacting with this thing, so I better put that in the background of this panel or whatever. I'll spend 30 seconds. I lay it out, go with my gut, and then I start working on it.
Oh, wow.
Man, that's awesome.
You never run out of space.
The reason why I do that is because originally I would lay out the entire book, but then I started second guessing every single decision I made. And I found out that just going with my gut, going with my instinct on storytelling and stuff that I've learned, if I just do that, it usually turns out the way I want it to be. And I mean, there are times when I do change panels, or I'll change things up, sometimes I'll even throw out entire pages. I just don't like the way that they're looking. But most of the time that it just works. I just get in the groove of it and I just start working on the pages and I go. I wouldn't suggest that to everybody. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I have a I feel like I just have a really good sense of storytelling, and I can kind of visualize the book in my head. That's kind of how I work. And,
Cool.
Kind of a different process, but.
I have a combo question. Two guys have asked the same thing. One of them is Adam Chapman from Comic Shenanigans podcast, and another is Jazz Manalo, who works at Cyber City Comics, is a huge fan of yours. They both want to know how you were tapped to collaborate with Jeff Johns, and how Jazz specifically says, how amazing was it to work with Jeff Johns on the Justice League run?
Yeah, that was kind of a fun story. I was on Batman Eternal at the time, and I wasn't really enjoying it too much. I wanted a chance at some of the on a bigger book. I really wanted to draw Justice League, and so I ended up calling Dan DiDio and just said, hey, I want to draw Justice League. It's kind of a scary thing to do, but I did it. I felt that if I want something, go right to the boss. The worst thing he can tell me is no. And at the time he said, well, we Ivan Reis is doing the book. We don't need an artist for it. And I said, okay, well, think about me in the future. I then one night, all of a sudden, just out of the blue, I got a text from Jeff And he said, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And I never really talked to Jeff before. And I thought, "Oh no, like what's he going to say to me?" You know? And then he ended up calling me that night, and you know, I'm on Eastern time and he's on California time. He calls me at like midnight. You know, it's like nine. One thing I've learned about Jeff is that once he gets something into his head, he needs to talk to you right away. Like he'll call you at whatever time. And so he calls me at midnight that night. And, we chatted on the phone for about an hour and he, you know, he just said, "Hey, I really want to work with you on Justice League." And I found out later though, that he never, like Dan DiDio never, it's not like he went to Dan and said, "Hey, who can we get on Justice League?" And Dan said, "Oh, Jay had mentioned that he wanted to draw." It was like they had never talked. He had never heard that from Dan. Just kind of all worked out. And so, yeah, he asked me if I wanted to draw it, and I said, yeah. And it was great. Like working with Jeff is awesome. If I could work with just Jeff Johns for the next 20, 30 years of, and just draw books. Like if Jeff came to me and said, "Hey, we're going to work on, you know, pick like some D or E list level," you know, I would probably say, "Yeah, let's do it." You know, just because I enjoy working with him so much. And,
elongated man.
yeah. Like if he brought that up, I'd be like, "Oh, okay, let's do it." But, he's a lot of fun to work with and he's very interactive and, he wants to, the best word to describe it is he's a collaborator. He wants to collaborate with you. You don't feel like you're just a cog in the wheel. You know, you feel like you are an equal part of the creation of a comic book. And, that's something I never really had before. I always just felt like I was just given a script and then you need to just go out and draw it and you have no say in the story and you really don't have any say in the direction. With Jeff, it was from day one. It was like, "What do you want to draw? What kind of direction do you want to go in? What things don't you want to draw? Here's my idea. Do you have any ideas?"
And that's awesome.
You know, a lot of the ideas that came about from Justice League is because of just riffing with him. I spent a couple days down with him at a DC summit that we had near the beginning of our Justice League run. I think we were kind of planning at that point to start doing Dark Side War. And we sat down for a good hour and a half, 2 hours, and just went over all the story beats. And, you know, when you do that as a creator, you feel very connected to the book. And then you feel like you want to give everything that you have to draw that book. And it was very special. And so I was very grateful to be able to work with him. And I'm sure it's not the last time. I'm sure we're going to work together on stuff in the future. It just has to, everything just has to kind of work out.
Well, that'll be amazing. I look at my shelf and I see that I'm a big DC fan, but I think I'm a bigger Jeff Johns fan with all the stuff that he does. That's so much fun to read. It's awesome. Yeah.
He's a great storyteller and the guy just has ideas. His ideas just, they just flow out of him. It's so awesome to hear him talk about story and to pitch things to you. And, he's got so many different story ideas. It's just, you know, finding the time to actually do them, you know?
Right. Right.
So Brian also asked, Jim Lee's and Greg Capullo's Batman is iconic. Did you find it challenging to write Batman, knowing some may compare it to them?
Good question.
Yeah, you know, it's always hard to do that. I you know, there's been so many different artists who've drawn Batman, and the one thing I will say is that I don't feel like I've actually drawn my Batman. Like I've drawn a lot of different Batman stuff, but I've never been 100% happy with the storyline I've never really felt like I was actually a part of something, incredible or Batman Eternal. I did the first three issues, but that was a 52 issue series. And I did a couple issues here and there, but I wasn't really part of the story planning. And I was there and then I kind of disappeared and other artists took over. And, that's something that's one of my major goals is the next time I draw Batman, I want it to be the last time I draw Batman. Let's say that I want to do something that's so That's my stamp on Batman, that that I can walk away from it and say I've done it. You know, mm-hmm. I don't. That's what keeps me coming back to Batman, and why I haven't, you know, kind of went off and done some other characters and some other things. I feel like I have to. I'm still seeking out that book. I'm still seeking out my Batman masterpiece or whatever, something that I can really put my stamp on the character, and then at that point I would feel comfortable walking away.
You're looking for your Hush.
Right.
Yeah. To be honest with you, like, I want to do something like that. And, it just, again, it has to be the right story. I don't just want to jump on anything. I want it to be something that's going to be special with and something that I can collaborate and add to. And, that's kind of what that's one of my goals, at DC Comics. That's one of the things I really want to do. And, I'm hoping that kind of thing will happen in the future. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Awesome. My wife is a huge Batman fan, probably bigger than I am. And she wants to know, short ears or long ears? And when do you know that they're too long or too short?
That's a good one.
I've always liked the shorter ears.
Okay.
I find if my sort of magic formula with Batman is that if you as an artist draw Batman really buff and really big, then he should have shorter ears. It makes him look tougher. It makes him look more like a beast, like more menace. But if you draw Batman more skinny, like Tim Sale drew Batman much, I mean, he was still muscular, but he drew him more of a skinnier Batman.
Right.
And the skinnier kind of head, then the taller ears looked and worked really well, and it fit. That's kind of my thing. I've tried drawing the longer ears, but I never feel like it fits or works with my style. And so I've always just stuck with, I was always really impressed when I saw like Jim Lee or Frank Miller and how they drew Batman with these short kind of stubby ears. And I just really liked that look. It just worked very well with the character. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Good answer. Okay. I think you've kind of already answered this one, so I'm going to change it slightly. So Brian wants to know, if you could work with any writer, who would that be? Can't be Jeff.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I mentioned before, Mike Mignola, I'd love to work with him on something. Yeah. I'd like to work with Tom King on something.
I was just going to say that.
I really did enjoy working that, the issue of the Button there. I think it would be fun to work with him on something and, in the future, Scott Snyder, he would be great to work with. I really like Scott. He's a great guy, and I like his storytelling. Jeff Lemire, Jeff Lemire would be fun. Like, Jeff Lemire's originally from my area down here, and so it'd be kind of cool to work with him on something and then do something quirky. Those are some of the guys I've really enjoyed their work, and I enjoy their writing. Yeah, I guess that would be my answer.
I think the Tom King thing is possible because he has recently said, I heard it, that he thinks you're probably the best artist right now in comics. So if you went to him, he'd probably be like, sure, no problem.
Let's make the call.
Yeah. I think it would be fun to work with him. Again, it's like, you know, it all has to come together, and sometimes it's hard to figure that stuff out because you have all these different schedules and, you know, it's something where you have to really sit down and be like, all right, let's hammer something out. Let's do something cool. I love Tom. He's a great, guy too. And I think he's got some really just a shout out for, the issue that he did, Batman and Elmer Fudd.
With
Lee Weeks. I mean, like, Lee Weeks is one of the best artists, like, ever. Like, I love his art. I can't sing enough praises about Lee. And that story, I thought, man, this is going to be such a weird joke. Like, it's just going to be a joke or something. But it was one of the best single issues of comics I've read. And I don't know. After reading that, I thought, man, Tom King, if he can write that, if he can make those characters all work, then he can do anything.
Who saw that coming? It was awesome.
Yeah, his winning streak is awesome right now, man. He can't write a bad book.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Okay. All right. So a couple of odd questions. Well, you already talked about what comics you're reading, but is there any new artists that have kind of caught your eye that you think are just sort of on the cusp of becoming huge?
Huh. I don't know, because I don't know if I don't really pay too much attention.
Okay.
I hardly have any time to go to the comic store and actually get comics. I had mentioned Jerome Opeña, but I mean, he's been around for a while. Yeah. And he's been around since before I was doing this. And I've always loved his work. I think he should be a much bigger name in the comic book industry. He's incredible. In fact, a lot of my storytelling, I was very inspired by the way he lays out a page and the way he has the composition of the panels and whatnot is from him. I don't really have a good answer because I sadly just don't really pay too much attention to a lot of that stuff. I could say that some of my favorite, like one of my other favorite artists today is Ryan Stegman.
He's great.
And Marvel, I love his work. I love his. He's kind of got more of a cartoonier style than I do. But I really love his stuff and anything he draws. I really dig. I'm sorry. I don't really have too good of an answer.
That's okay.
To that.
That's okay.
I don't really read too many comics, and I haven't really paid too much attention to a lot of that stuff.
One thing that I do find kind of striking in your art, and you've done a few panels like this, but you do this really cool rain effect on some of your, particularly in your Batman ones. Is that sort of a trademark of yours, or would you consider that a trademark?
I don't know. I just like the look of it. It's fun to draw. I mean, when I'm doing like commissions and head sketches, it's, you know, there's only so many angles you can draw. And so sometimes I'll throw in some rain to make it look a little to me, I think Batman, like when you're drawing Batman, I think Batman in Gotham, it should look like the cruddiest rot place to live. And I hate being outside in the rain. Like I hate it. Like there's nothing worse than being like caught out in the rain. It stinks. And the cool thing about rain though in a comic book is it just adds an extra element of motion and of detail, and it's a cool effect and it's very easy to do, and it just makes everything look a little bit more grittier, darker, grungier. I enjoy doing that in comics and on covers and stuff. It just adds an extra layer of grittiness to the feel of a piece or of a page. And it's, I don't know. I've always been really attracted to that look when it comes to Batman, and Jim Lee did it a lot. David Finch does it as well. And, one thing I was joking, like the next time I had said to somebody something like, you know, the next time I draw a Batman story, I actually would like to set it in the winter so I can draw some snow.
There you go.
That'd be awesome.
That would be great.
You know, it would add a different kind of look, right, to it. You know, there's not too many stories that take place in the winter, and you know, that might be kind of neat to do, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Any last questions, Anthony?
Yeah, I got a quirky question for you. Since you're a big hockey fan, and you know we're all from Canada here, are you a Red Wings fan or a Toronto Maple Leaf fan?
I'm a Maple Leafs fan.
That a boy. All right.
I'm a Maple Leafs fan. I've been a Leafs fan. Well, I've been a Leafs fan for quite a while now, and so it's finally it's finally exciting to see that they're building a, what looks like it could be a really good hockey team in the next couple of years, and maybe they'll make a run at it.
Right. And awesome. Yeah. I'm sorry for you being a Leafs fan, and I'm also happy that you're a Leafs fan.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the days of being sorry for Leaf fans is coming to an end, because once they win a cup, it's going to be like, if the Leafs can win a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years, it will go down in history as the greatest Stanley Cup victory of all time.
Like, no it'll more
be, be the end of all the jokes, and it's going to happen. I've never had so much confidence in the Toronto Maple Leafs as I have in the last couple of years. So, you know,
that makes me feel good. That's one of those things on the bucket list. I've seen a World Series. I've been to events that, you know, were on the bucket list, but seeing a Maple Leaf Cup win, I didn't think it'd be possible, but there's hope. I think there's hope.
Sure. For sure.
Okay. Awesome. I do have an odd question too. What's your favorite donut?
Oh man. You know what? My favorite donut growing up was the Walnut Crunch at Tim Hortons, but then they got rid of it.
Oh,
They don't even have it anymore. That was my favorite donut, like, for years and years. That's all I would ever get. So usually when I get a donut now, I'll get like a Boston cream. Boston cream or like an old fashioned glazed or something like that. That's usually what I'll get. That's only for Canadians to.
It's kind of a Canadian question. All right, Boston cream.
we'll bring you a 6-pack at Fan Expo of Boston cream.
So there you go.
and maybe a Walnut Crunch if we could find it somewhere.
I don't know if we'll find it.
We'll start the petition now.
hey Jason, I just gotta say, in communicating with fans, everyone who talks about meeting you says what a really, really nice guy you are, and everybody's experience with you is great. So seeing you succeed and do well, I mean, everybody's really, really rooting for you and happy for you. So it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. So
thanks for that. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things I like to kind of, maybe here's a last little story or whatever, but when I was trying to get into the industry, I went to New York Comic Con, and this is when I kind of just started breaking in. I was working with Aspen Comics. They had brought me out to do some promotion. I was working on like Soulfire at that time, and I won't say his name, but there was an artist that I really, really loved, and he was kind of an up and comer with me, and he was going to be there, and I went over to his table and I waited to talk with him, and I finally got up to talk with him, and it just seemed like he had no interest in talking to me. And I kind of mentioned I was working with Aspen Comics at the time, and he kind of looked at me and gave me like a roll of the eyes, like, you know, Aspen Comics, that's not real comics, you know? And I learned a very good lesson that day. And it's something that, you know, I learned from my parents and whatnot, but it was just reinforced that, you know, treat everybody the way you want to be treated, you know, show respect to everybody, you know, be thankful for the work that you do and for the job that you have and the blessings that you've been given, and be content, you know, with where you are in your life. And I, you know, that kind of, so I decided that day, like, never, like, always show love to everybody that you come across. And because you don't know, I haven't bought one thing from this artist since. I haven't bought, I haven't supported him. And I mean, maybe I just got him on a bad day. You know, maybe I'll run into him at a con down the line, but, he'll be fine. But, you know, it really rubbed me the wrong way. And I learned, you know, try to always, I mean, that's just a good life lesson for anybody. You know, you never know who you're going to run across. You know, try to, you know, show some love to your, to people that you meet, and be humble. And, you know, I don't see myself as something, I just see myself as a fan who just draws comics for a living. Like, I see myself as a fan equal with everybody else, and I'm having fun, and I love geeking out over the same things that everybody else likes to geek over. And, you know, that's just the way I try to try to, you know, live life. And I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful for people who support my work and for that they buy it and they actually want to read it. And I'm thankful for you guys for wanting to interview me. And, you know,
oh man, it's our pleasure.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It's really cool. I'm thankful for that. So,
I was just going to say, I cannot think of a better way to end this interview. I don't know, Eric, do you have any last questions?
Yeah, you know, just no more questions. Just wanted again to reinforce that fact that I remember you, meeting you two cons ago at, I don't know if it was Toronto or Fan Expo, when you told me that you were going to be on the Justice League book. And I was really excited for you because of how excited you were as a fan. Like, it came across as a fan. So to see it succeed and do what it did, it made me so happy. And now to be able to talk to you on a podcast is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And anytime you guys want to chat, you know, once DC, I don't know when the heck they'll announce my next project, but when they finally do, you know, and you want to talk about it, we can jump back on and
awesome.
That would be great. That'd be a real thrill.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
for sure.
We're looking forward to seeing you at Fan Expo this year. We'll be in.
Yeah. Yes. Stop by.
We'll be there.
Awesome.
With some with some Boston cream donuts.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So there it is, folks. Another one for the books. Just want to send a special thank you to Jason for joining us in the cave this week. It's always a treat to be able to talk to him. And again, to say thank you to his family for being generous with their time as well. We know how busy life can get, so to be able to talk to him for as long as we did and to be able to share it with the listeners is a real awesome treat. Again, a special thank you as well to Martin Slam Duncan for holding down the fort. You hear the little beeps and buzzes that you hear at the beginning of the podcast, that's me fighting the Skype monsters. I defeated them, I came back, but Martin Slam Duncan held down the fort like the great co-host that he is. Don't forget to check out the Fastball special. If you like our show, The Cave of Solitude, you're definitely going to like his as well. So if you have any feedback, listener feedback, email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. We love hearing from the fans, and listener requests are always welcome as well. If you have ideas of things you want us to talk about, send it to us, as well as send us an iTunes review. It helps to get the show out there. We're getting some really good guests, really good content, so spread the word, because you know the more listeners that we get, the better content that we'll be able to get for you as well. So once again, I'm Eric Anthony. Thank you so much for listening to The Cave of Solitude, and we will be back soon.